Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have some brief comments, and the material that I'm handing out has some enclosures that I'll be referencing here. With me is Mr. Mike McAllister, who is director of a field services division that handles probation and parole. My name is Joe Diamond, and I'm the director of the Division of Community Corrections within the New Hampshire Department of Corrections. Commissioner Wren extends his regrets for not being here, but a family commitment made long ago prevents him from attending today's hearing. The department wishes to offer qualified support for Senate Bill 52. We agree that some adjustments to the justice reinvestment legislation are in order, but we believe strongly that some of the changes recommended in this bill would undermine public safety and wind up costing taxpayers more money. The governor and the bipartisan supporters of the justice reinvestment legislation heard our department predict that with the provisions of that legislation, we would reduce prison population by this date without compromising public safety, and we would reduce that population by approximately 50 inmates. I'm pleased to report that progress thus far has been better than we expected, and a demonstration of that is that a major accomplishment has been our ability to stop using a gymnasium at the North Country facility where 112 men were incarcerated in one room because of that reduction of population. That means that space that was meant for recreation and programming cannot be used for that purpose, as opposed to, you can imagine, the comfort zone of 112 people living in one room. The early data for the department as a whole bodes very well, but I hasten to add, this is early. We haven't been at this very long. We can't claim this is a long-term success, but I'd much rather be working from this data set than a negative data set, so we're moving on the right track. The area of Senate Bill 52 that we are most comfortable with pertains to giving the parole board more discretion pertaining to parole violations. That is, we think the 90-day recommittal should remain the preferred default time frame. However, we agree that the parole board might wish to impose a somewhat longer recommittal in the case of a recalcitrant or otherwise high-risk parolee. We also think that in some instances, the parole board might choose to issue a slightly shorter sanction at its discretion. Our thinking in this matter is guided by research that has been done about the length of recommitment in the state of Kansas, where there was absolutely no statistical difference between recommittal for 90 days and for 180 days when they matched same kinds of prisoners. So basically, the taxpayers of Kansas were paying for an additional 90 days without getting any benefit from that recommittal rate in terms of recidivism. There is some recent research reported by Dr. Letessa, one of the outside experts who was here at the symposium that Senator Hood spoke to. He's one of America's foremost criminologists, and he indicated that certain high-risk offenders benefit from cognitive behavioral interventions and may require somewhat longer commitments, hence our support for the discretion in the area of recommitment. We respectfully request that the committee not modify the section of Senate Bill 500 that pertains to mandatory release to supervision. We believe that some misunderstand this aspect of justice reinvestment legislation as somehow being soft on criminals who are some of the most challenging offenders. As was said earlier, over 97% of the inmates in New Hampshire will be released. A very, very tiny number stay in prison for the rest of their life. The Constitution mandates that offenders reaching their maximum sentence be released without any supervision once they've completed their sentence. This policy requires that offenders who have not been granted parole supervision earlier in their incarceration be released on parole within nine months of the maximum term. Our data shows that the vast majority of New Hampshire offenders who reoffend do so within 8 months of release. Having these offenders under supervision for 9 months therefore enhances public safety significantly. It increases the probability that those who are noncompliant will be monitored and quickly apprehended. It allows law enforcement to know where the offender is and what he or she is doing. As importantly, it affords crime victims some peace of mind knowing that parole officers and other members of law enforcement know where that offender is and what he or she is doing. In closing, the justice reinvestment legislation is driven by the latest science and research about public safety, the best correctional practices, and cost containment. This is why Commissioner refers to the department's approach as being smart on crime. We respectfully request that the committee consider the amendment that I've distributed to the committee, and we are suggesting that we keep New Hampshire moving in the direction that the data thus far indicates. Thank you very much, and Mr. McAllister and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bennett. I actually don't have an amendment.
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's the amendment we're recommending.
I have nothing on that. I don't know what you're asking if it's not Center Bradley.
Then
it's
I'm
at the bottom of their handout, so it's not a matter for the committee's consideration at this time, but
right.
The committee will take that
right.
into consideration when we review the materials.
Okay.
So, other questions? I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh, no. Mr. Chairman, you have a prerogative.
Well, no, please.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I'm going to ask you the question that Senator Bradley had asked that we ask you. Do you have sufficient resources to do the job?
Okay. We do at the moment because of federal funds. And Senator Bradley raised a legitimate concern, and frankly, I would be delighted to hear that people want to give us more resources, but I don't think that's going to happen this year or in the immediate future. As a result of several federal grants, some of which did not come to the state, some of which came directly to counties, and as a result of reallocation of funds, we now have services in place that we did not have at the time. I must say that during the deliberations on Senate Bill 500, in its study phase and in its legislative phase, we made it very clear that resources in some states were put up front. The state of Texas, the state of Arizona, the state of Kansas put money up front because they wanted to avoid building new prisons. That was not happening here, and we recognized that. So we had to rely on some reallocation of existing funds or redirecting of existing funds and federal funds. We now have in place, as a result of the Attorney General's office making available to us $900,000 over 2 years, a statewide contract that can serve people with substance use and mental health disorders, exclusively people released or under the care and custody of the Department of Corrections, probation, parole, field services particularly. That contract was put out to bid. It has been awarded, and operations on it actually started about 3 weeks ago. We also have a Second Chance Act grant, which is a federal grant, in this county, which is a demonstration project that is completing its first year, and frankly, we don't know, based on the federal budget, whether there'll be a second year. We also have 8 counselor case managers who are placed in the 4 highest volume district offices of the state of New Hampshire, probation and parole offices, Concord, Manchester, Nashua, and Exeter. Those counselors were not there before this came into being and are there to help carry the load for some of the probation and parole officers in dealing with the social services and substance abuse needs of the people in their jurisdictions. The Department of Health and Human Services and its Bureau of Drug and Alcohol Services just received a huge federal grant, and I frankly don't remember whether it's $12 million over 3 years or 4 years, but it's a huge amount of money called Access to Recovery, which is substance use focused, but also handles co-occurring disorders. 3 target populations, one of them is re-entering offenders. So can I sit here and tell you that we have everything we need? Absolutely not. But we are prepared and able to serve people at a level we were not a year ago.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that we've got some federal funding for this. But what would happen if all the federal funding went away and we had to depend upon state dollars to continue this program? What would be the cost in state dollars?
When this legislation went through, we were asked to project costs and needs. If you remember, this legislation is referred to specifically as just as reinvestment. And the question was, where did reinvestment come from? You have to have something to reinvest. We projected that at the 4th or 5th year of this project, we would be saving, in terms of population reductions and unit closure at the prison, approximately $5 million a year, $4.5 to $5 million a year. Our request was, and the legislative intent as stated in the, our request was for 50% of that fund, of those savings, to be reinvested. The legislative intent states an intent to reinvest. It doesn't state a specific percentage amount that I can recall. So what our hope is to stage this in such a way that the federal funds are in place until we prove our effectiveness, and then the state funds will be saved, and a portion of them will be reinvested. Will $2.5 million plus the 8 positions that are currently in place cover it all? Can't tell you with absolute certainty. It depends on the numbers. But if the numbers continue as they are today, and that's an if, we know this works elsewhere. What I don't know is whether it's going to work at the pace. I have no doubt that the the policies that we have undertaken as a result of legislative permission are working and will continue to work because they've worked elsewhere. This is not something brand new concocted in New Hampshire. This is a practice that has worked. So that becomes a policy decision for the legislature, whether you want to invest in what has proven to be and proves to be lower cost and better public safety or not. That's not a decision for us to make. We administer it. Those are decisions placed in the legislature.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. So how much have you saved? How much has been saved in the short period of time that the program has been in effect?
I can tell you what we save generally in what is referred to as the marginal cost. We haven't closed units. We haven't decreased the population enough. We've decreased the population somewhere around 150 inmates. We were supposed to reduce it by around 50 at this point. So we're having good progress and no increase and no spike in a crime rate that I'm familiar with. I haven't seen any statistics or data suggesting that there has been. Our estimate of the marginal savings, and those savings are very specific to inmate clothing, inmate food, inmate pay, and medical costs. Medical costs are the biggest driver, as you might imagine, besides staff, personnel. So our estimate is around $4,500, $4,000 per person at a marginal level. When we get to the point when we've saved enough to start closing units through attrition, those savings become much more dramatic and much more significant. That's as good an answer as I can give you at this point because we're really just 12 months into this.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Yes.
Senator Grove.
Related to that, the $400,000 of marginal variable cost that you would save, what is the cost per person that you, per prisoner that you release for the 9-month supervision? And again, marginal cost.
Yeah. I don't know that there is, I can't speak to that because I don't run the Division of Field Services. Mike may be able to. We did not increase the number of probation parole officers. We increased the number of counselor case managers in the high volume offices. Carroll County was not one of those because of the volume of people that we deal with in that county. So the increase was part of funds that were reallocated, state funds in place then that were not being used as effectively as they could have been for a program that was supposed to be for state offenders and wound up being for other offenders, was moved in to be exclusively for state offenders. Those are the 8 positions that are now stationed in those 4 offices that I mentioned. That's the only added increase. Now, of course, there is paperwork cost, there is some telephone cost, and there's some travel, but I can't break it down for you that specifically. I'm Director of Community Corrections. I'm not Director of Fiscal Services.
I'll go back and ask this, pretty much the same question I asked the Attorney General. I'm trying to understand what is the Department of Corrections doing with prisoners, special sexual offenders, mm-hmm. It seems like that's like a huge part of this challenge, mm-hmm. to work with them
right.
While they're in your facility.
Right. Well, again, I can... Oh, we have the Assistant Commissioner, my boss. I think he can answer that question much better than I can.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill McGonigal. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. Sex offender treatment is driven by professional assessments that are done of the offenders. I mean, we tend to talk about sexual offenders as all one stripe, and they are not. But they go through an evaluation, and there are different levels of treatment that are recommended for them, and they're predominantly cognitive behavioral approaches, which are proven to be the most effective with incarcerated populations, that addresses not just the issues of sexual misconduct and all, but also all the other criminogenic factors that lead to success or failure on parole. Those programs are run, and most of the offenders who are required to attend those do so in the later part of their time frame, partly just to make sure that everybody gets access prior as close to their release date as possible. So they can complete the programs. They're up to 18 months in duration. The they also do an assessment at the time of completion prior to their appearing before the parole board, and they provide the parole board with an assessment of the level of continuing risk and recommendations about what type of community-based services are appropriate for that offender upon release. I think it's important to recognize that doing treatment inside prison is only one piece of the puzzle. Research shows both in sexual offending and other areas of offending that if you do just programming inside of prisons, you get a moderate impact on the ultimate recidivism of that group. If you do nothing in prison at all and only do community-based treatment, you get a slightly better result. But by far the best result is when you have a continuum of care that starts inside, not only addresses the behaviors, but also builds responsivity to community-based treatment post-release, that continuity between inside and outside is where you get by far the most effective impact on recidivism. I hope that addresses it somewhat. The federal funds that Mr. Diamond spoke to in terms of the ERA funds that the Department of Justice gave us for both substance use and mental health, the continuing sexual offender treatment in the community is a subset of the mental health piece, so that those services are supported by that funding stream. So.
Thank you very much, Senator Parker.
Thank you. Mr. McGonigal, the previous speaker had mentioned 150 inmates have been released under this early program. Can you tell me how many were sex offenders and then how many were violent offenders?
I can't off the top of my head. It's safe to say those who have been released under the 9-month mandatory supervision are heavily represented by violent and sexual offenders, because they are the vast majority of those who are in for nonviolent and lower order offenses. Usually are fairly compliant and go through the process of their incarceration and their programming pretty well. So that group are exactly the kind of folks that we want to promote having supervision in the community. Dr. Latessa made the comment last week is that these are exactly the people that we want to have under close supervision. Rather than just walking out of prison with no one having any responsibility for where they're going or what they're doing. The other provisions around the nonviolent offenders, 120%, that's a fairly new piece of the offenders that are qualifying for that, just started qualifying for that piece, so they're not a large section of that. Of the 150 at this point, but over the course of time will be. I can try to have those data for you if I can at a later date as we go through. One of the things I want to caution about that number of releases, prison population is a fairly simple, the projections of prison population is a fairly simple formula. It's the number of admissions, whether it's for new crimes or for parole violations, and the average length of stay. The majority of the provisions in SB 500 focused on some ways of limiting the number of people who come back by providing better services in the community, and providing the probation and parole officers with alternative and intermediate sanctions before they have to resort to violation of parole. But the other piece is to shorten the length of stay where it's prudent to do so, and where the evidence says it is safe to do so. And I think that's where the real rubber meets the road with SB 500 is the combination of those two factors are playing out. What we aren't farther enough along yet to see what the return rate on the individuals who are being released under those provisions yet, you know, because it's still fairly new. You know, 8 to 10 months from now, we'll have a much better sense of what the cycle looks like and what the sustainable reduction in prison population looks like.
May I just correct an impression that I might have left inadvertently?
Yes, please, Mr. Bennett.
What I said was that our prison population has been reduced by somewhere around 150. It's not that we released 150 of that particular group of prisoners. And the Assistant Commissioner spoke to what goes into population reductions, number of people coming in, length of stay. So the number of 150 is a total population reduction, roughly. You know, it fluctuates from day to day. Right, not the release specifically to this bill, but the total population has been reduced by approximately that figure to date.
It's all good news on that part, I can tell you. And the sky hasn't fallen yet.